Sweet. There you go. It starts at 3:45. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Good to see all of you here. Yes, yes. Everybody ate the cookies? Yes. I need to stay away from cookies. I have like two stomachs around here that I'm working on. Yeah. Yes. Good to see all of you. I want to gauge, before I introduce myself and stuff, let me gauge my audience because I actually had a different idea of what was going to be here. C-level executives, is that right here? C-level, CEOs, entrepreneurs, anybody, business owners? Okay, so who's in the audience? Intern. Okay, intern. Nurse. Okay, nurse. Minister. All right, that's my man. Counselors. Teachers. All right. This is going to be good then. All right, great. I'll take that. So we got nurses, ministers, counselors, teachers, the people who actually run the country. That's actually how that works. That's it. You know, politicians get the credit, but the people who run the country are the nurses, ministers, all of us like that. Well, I think I have some pretty good stuff going on here today. My name is Antonio T. Smith, Jr. I happen to be... I make some money, so that's pretty cool as well. Also, I grew up homeless from 6 to 18. I was in CPS custody. If you're familiar, I'm from Texas. So if you're familiar with Child Protective Services, I didn't get out of there until I was 18. And then I went straight off to the Army. I joined when the Army tested me. I scored, who's familiar with the Army or any military? All right, great. I scored an 86 on the ASVAB. So on the ASV, anybody know? Okay, so he understands what that means. I scored an 86 on the ASVAB. You need a 30 to get into at least the Army. I scored an 86, and they tested my GT score, IQ score, and it was well over 130. And it explained why I had so many different problems growing up and why I had such problems paying attention. And why I was always picked on at the same time, because I stayed inside of my head. I didn't have many friends, except for the ones I made up in my head. I always stared off in space daydreaming about things, because that's just kind of what you do when you stay inside your head all day. I went military intelligence, then became counterintelligence, and then I can't really say too much after that due to the top secret security clearance and the paper they make you sign. 75 years, you can't talk after that. Just know I did some pretty cool stuff for the United States Army, and some of that is still relevant today. All of that to say, I know a little bit about some low self-esteem, and I'll tell you why here in a moment. But I'm encouraged by who's in the room, because all of you, at least the titles that I heard, are the people that stopped me from committing suicide. And you have to think about this. I've designed this next hour and a half to be light and then get a little heavy. And in about 30 minutes, it'll be real heavy. It really will be. You can have a Q&A. I mean, you can design it. You can be Q&A the whole time, should you want to. So if you ever met somebody or wanted to know what it's like inside of foster homes and you don't know, you should probably ask. That's pretty cool. If you've ever wanted to know what it's like to do some top secret missions for the Army, you should probably ask that. I won't be able to answer too much, but it's pretty cool to talk about. All these great things like that. I am excited to be here. I had no idea this was the greatest conference on planet Earth. I really did not. I'm serious. I'm going to be here the whole time next year. I had no idea that this is very well done. And the information, I was just doing yoga. I really was. I was doing yoga in a suit. You've got to have a pretty good conference to make someone do yoga in a suit. That really happened. And some Alan Edmonds, I was doing yoga. That doesn't make any sense, but that's what happened here in the United States on this day. So I'm pretty excited about that as well. This is about broken bones, broken skin, and dealing with the effects of low self-esteem and identifying low self-esteem. Some of you are going to figure out that your self-esteem is not where it should be. Some of you are going to figure out that you are actually a primary aggressor, while others of you are going to figure out that you were not a primary aggressor, but you are one now because you made a vow and said, I'm not going to take this anymore. And now you're doing some things that don't necessarily line up with your morals, but they do line up with your vows. And we're going to talk about the difference between your vows and your morals and all that other great stuff. So put on your seatbelt. For some who's highly empathetic. You can, okay, once, okay, good. That makes sense, because I can feel all of your energy, that's for sure. Okay, you can walk into a room, and you instantly know what everyone's feeling. That, okay, that's okay. These, okay, good. That's sweet. This class, you're going to be most helpful in this class, because when we get to what it feels like to deal with people like me, you're going to have so much to say that's going to be helpful for all of us. So I want to go in order by just identifying low self-esteem. It is not what you think it is. Low self-esteem is obviously an aspect of how you view yourself, but it is not yourself. It is how you view yourself. It is not yourself. We really can't move forward in the next hour and a half without grasping this very simple and basic concept, because some of you who suffer from low self-esteem, I'm going to identify you here very briefly as I keep going. I won't call you out though. I won't call you out. It'll just be all over your face. You think what you see is who you are. In fact, I can't help myself. This is the minister side of what I like to do. I can't help myself. You're never living in your current reality the way you think you are. Everything is a residual effect of what you're going through. Basically, whatever you're reaping today, you sowed yesterday. That means that if you don't like your life today, that's not who you are. It's who you were. I have to slow down here because this fundamental concept will save lives. And please, there's two things I know about numbers. I know in the current climate of the world that one in every four people have had an STD. It's a crazy fact, right? That's a fact. That's numbers fact. I also know one in every four people suffer from a negative view of self-esteem. This means as many people as you hear on the media about something of some sort of outbreak of some disease, there are equally as many people that have low self-esteem. Some people even have the disease and the low self-esteem. That's how they got it in the first place. There's too many people in here right now for someone not to have low self-esteem. It's a residual effect. Whatever you think you are today is who you were. It's what you planted. That means that you should never judge your current life by your current reality. You never should. Should you continue to do so, you keep yourself in a repetitious cycle that would doom you to poverty and low self-esteem. You see, when you think something, when you speak that thing, you feel a certain way about what you just spoke about. When you feel about something, you think about something. When you think about something, you speak about something. When you speak about something, you feel about something. When you feel about something, you think about something. Does anybody see the cycle going on there? And until you break one part, doesn't matter where, the speaking, the thinking, or the feeling, until you shift it, you're going to keep yourself always in the same process. Therefore, low self-esteem is an aspect of how you view yourself. It is only your image, but when it hit your subconscious, you interpreted what you saw. Especially if you're addicted to anything, coming off addiction, or still trying to fight battles from when you were 9 years old. Some of the strongest people in the world, the most high-performing people, have the lowest amounts of self-esteem. How many? Don't raise your hands. How many of you suffer from perfectionism? Don't raise your hands. Don't raise your hands. Your perfectionism comes from low self-esteem. It is you, it is you still trying to prove to someone that you're capable. I can do this, and I'm going to show them. And so now you're so much of a perfectionist, you have no idea. It's because it's how you view yourself. There are three ways to train your subconscious. Now, I open up for questions, and I'm saying a lot. Three ways to train your subconscious to get rid of this. Your subconscious works in three parts. I forgot to tell you. Also, love cognitive behavior therapy, so I've been doing that the whole time. And I love quantum physics and neuroscience, and I'm well adapted in all three. So you're going to hear a lot of that as well. Three ways to train your subconscious. Number one, the story you tell yourself and others, you have to change it or control it. Number two, your limiting beliefs, change it or control it. Number three, the judgments or fear of consequences that you have. When you look in the mirror and when you hear a criticism, how many of you hear criticism and you freak out? That's okay. You can raise your hand about that one. That's necessarily mean you have low self-esteem, but you understand. It's one of those. You hear criticism, you get angry. As soon as you hear criticism, the first thing you do is get defensive. Who's that? Where are my angry people at in the room? Let me identify. Okay, angry people. Okay, she said so-so. Okay, you're angry. That's good. I was angry forever. I was never happy unless I was angry. Who's like that? I can't be the only one. Unless you knew I was mad at you, I wasn't happy. I couldn't leave a room without slamming a door because I wanted you to know I was upset with you. Who does that? Silent treatment. All right. Okay. All right. We got somebody now. Okay. This is like solid. My wife gives me the solid treatment all the time, you know. The solid treatment. All of these things. Do you really have to do that? Really? Is when the universe was created, doesn't matter how you think, the universe was created, that's up to you and your school of thought or school of belief. But when it was created, did it say, let there be silent treatment? No, it is not a universal law. It is not something that we have to do. It is something we feel we have to do because once we interpreted the event, what we decided to do was match it to the story we tell ourselves and others. Did you see what just happened? I know no one in here knows I'm a black guy in the front of the room. I know you don't know it. I know you don't know it. I know we don't see color. I know you don't. But I am. I'm a black guy in the room. Now, the story you tell yourself or been told will then make you interpret me in whatever light. Vice versa. The story I've told myself about you will then be interpreted, and I will make a judgment before I ever see you. Does that make sense to anybody? The way money treats you is how you let it treat you in your head. In order for you to be in any relationship with money, you have to first be in a relationship. And some of you have money issues. You also have relationship issues because it's the same relationship. Money and people, the problem is you are the common denominator in relationship with money or the relationship with people. You're the denominator. And how you treat others is just so happen to be how you treat money. So when you get to the aspect of how you view yourself, you then interpret the meaning. You ever met someone that says, well, you're beautiful. I just wish you can see what I see. Anybody ever said that to someone, but they couldn't see it? You absolutely couldn't. Okay, let me pause. The one thing I will not do is be boring. I promise you. It is perfectly okay to give you some feedback. I'm not going to be bored. We're here for an hour and a half. The last thing you want me to do is be clear eyes. You don't want that. Okay. You don't want that at all. Okay. But honestly, when you see yourself, you're going to see yourself through the story you tell yourselves and others, your limiting beliefs, and your fear of consequences or how you've been judged. You're going to see yourself through what other people have trained you to do. That's how it's going to happen. So when most of you look into a mirror, you're not looking at you with your thoughts. You're looking at you with their thoughts. Who can relate to that? Which of my empaths can relate to that? Okay, this is why I said the empaths. You're going to drive this class. Drive this class. Okay. Which other? And then we immediately think we can't handle what's going on because they told us so. And then in our experience, we say, well, I can't handle it. I can't deal with what's going on. I can't handle this. Who's, I know you're not doing it now. Who's had some credit card bills that really stressed them out? Okay, my man's like, man, it was terrible. Now think about that for a second. Me too. I'm with you, right? Think about that for a second. I got some credit card bills that really stressed me out. But we weren't running for our lives. We weren't a gazelle being chased by a lion. This was no, had something worse happened to me and you, we would have put it into perspective and say, you know what, it's not that serious. How many of you have done that before? You're having a bad day and you got a call and one of your very close people died. That bad day didn't matter anymore. Who's in here ever had the worst day of your life? Nobody? Everybody in here is saved and going to heaven? That's cool. Yeah, never had any problems. Anybody had the worst day of their life? Anybody ever been crucified by other people? Okay, if you're going to follow your dreams, expect to be crucified by other people. That's the way that works. Okay. Who's had another bad day of your life? And another bad day of your life? If we had like 15 worst days of our lives, yet we're still here. This is the illusion of a negative self-esteem. So when you check yourself, when you think of yourself, you're going to then think of yourself in the manner in which is not to some standard or some universal understanding. You're going to say something like, I can't do this. I'm a bar for minister, but you can do all things. I couldn't help myself. I really could. I couldn't help myself. But you get it. You on one aspect, you say you can around believers. But then when you go off by yourself, you're stuck with your own thoughts, which is probably the worst place to be for someone with a negative self-esteem. Overthinkers? Any overthinkers in the room? You can always identify overthinkers. Overthinkers are great multitaskers, too. They can do it. Overthinkers will find two people talking in a room. When they walk in the room, those two people stop talking, and they will overthink themselves. They were talking about me. Come on, who's done it? Come on, you know you've done it. They were talking about me. To find out 3 days later, they were talking about chicken and broccoli. And you're like, oh, it's not that bad. But that whole 3 days was suffering pain for you because you made up a whole different reality that matched your self-esteem. Any questions so far? Yes. That's fair. Give me an example. Because on one case, you could be talking about using cognitive dissonance to help you out. In the other case, you could be very well driven but still have low self-esteem. Okay, that's fair. Anybody else in that category? I know that. Honestly, in some respects, you're fair. It is healthy. Now, this is where it gets paradoxical, but it's not. It's healthy to care about what people think about you. It's also healthy not to care about what people think about you. It's one of those conundrums. You got to try to find the balance. I want all of you to say, but that was the greatest guy of all time. I do. At the same time, I don't care what any of you say. if it's going to make me feel bad, make me go home and kick the dog. This is makes it. This is therapists often don't have high levels of empathy because they take on problems all the time and they have to shield themselves from going home and kicking the dog. So a concise answer to your question is you have to watch the balance there. Because if you genuinely are proving people wrong, that's good for this level. But what got you here won't get you there. As you go higher, and so what I didn't say was I'm a top 1% income earner. As you go higher in making others money or developing companies, I get paid to run personalities, to influence people. It's the real reason people pay me. There is no other reason. It has nothing to do with my IQ, nothing to do with my intelligence. So when I get into a room, individualize 40 to 50 different personalities. People pay me to go in their companies and fix their problems. And then I fix that and I walk away and I go to the next person. If I was always trying to prove people wrong, I would be in competition with the people who hired me. Because part of proving people wrong is that healthy competition of, I want to show you that I'm better than you. A big chunk of getting successful is to never show anybody you're better than them. It's the number one law of power. Who's familiar with Robert Greene's 48 Laws of Power? Okay, my man got it. I see he's got it. It's the number one law of power. Never outshine the master. You do that, you're hampering for an opportunity to get cut or to become the sacrificial lamb, well, not lamb, goat. I couldn't make it a lamb. I had to change it real quick. So as you go higher, you're going to have to switch that motive. I'll give you an example of what I did. I grew up homeless 6 to 14. I spent about 6 to 7 years in this little trash can, small town, Galveston, Texas. And it's a dumpster. Wisconsin has a better, yeah, I got like recycling. It's serious in Wisconsin. It's the first thing I've noticed when I got here. It's like, if you want to do it in Texas, you know, guns are serious in Texas. Guns are serious in Texas, you know, but not recycling, okay? Not recycling. And what I did was I said, when I got out of the trash can, I'm never going to be forgotten because people forgot my birthday. They left me in homelessness, never came back for me, ever. I was 28 before I talked to my mom again. Everybody left me. So what I said, I'm never going to be forgotten again. And that took me very, very far. It also took me to a place of selfishness I couldn't identify. Because I would do things never to be forgotten. Now, I have the same motive. I don't ever want to be forgotten. But now it's shifted to legacy. Now all I do is make people millionaires. I help people become better in their lives. Because my never to be forgotten has shifted from I'm going to go down in a bullet of flames or something to as long as I make impact and add value to everybody's life, then I'll never be forgotten. I treat people now like the most important thing that I've done all day. It's a balance. What got me there couldn't get me here. So as you find your motive, because she's doing right, she's got great competition. Once you get higher, you start. Great example. Women are told, hey, Miss Woman, job. Great job. Try harder. You do harder. And then now when you get to my level, job. This is so America. The same thing we promoted you for, now we tell you the opposite. Oh, no. Don't do that. Be more ladylike. Stop being assertive. Stop being aggressive. Now, we wanted you to do that, when you didn't affect my job. Now that you're affecting my job, I've got something to say. Women, who can relate to what I just said? Because that is the truth. It is the absolute truth. That's data. Here's what happens. This is why women professors, I spent a lot of time being a college professor, I couldn't figure out why John would be like, Dr. McIntyre would be like, hey, I'm John. Students just call me John. Dr. Vanessa Parker was like, I am Dr. Vanessa Parker. Such and such, such and such. Call me Dr. Vanessa Parker. And I was like, wait, okay, well, what's going on with that? Had nothing to do with self-esteem. Had everything to do with the fact that it was only 3 women on permanent staff. 300 men. They had the leeway to relax. The women never had a chance to not keep proving themselves. Even in the teacher's lounge, the women had to continue to work hard in relaxation. Any women can relate to that? Okay. I'm like, sounded really liberal. I'm from Texas, too. It's almost crazy. But I'm not. I'm just telling you data. You want to be careful with all your self-esteem. So what I just did is I just gave you 1 through 4 that fast. How it manifests, how all this stuff happened, how it works. Let's see if we can get one more question. Let me give me, come on, throw me one, man. I'm feeling your energy. Throw me an alley-oop. It's all right. That was fine. Yeah, it's fine. Okay. He's like, man, you're amazing. I appreciate you. Thank you very much, man. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. I appreciate you. All right, so what keeps low self-esteem going? Is that fair? What keeps low self-esteem going? The number one answer that I hope I can take the top of your skull off and pour it into is you have a mean-making machine that has disturbed you and held you back all this time. I counsel someone as a celebrity publicist. And she doesn't think she's pretty. She's a real pretty person. And I was trying to figure out what's going on here. And I couldn't. Normally, when someone is depressed, the picture in their head doesn't match the picture in their reality. They have a view of themselves in their head. And since they're not living that view, it causes cognitive dissonance. 2 neurons holding competing ideas, which biologically causes frustration. You stay in frustration long enough, you get to discouragement. You stay in discouragement long enough, you get to depression. And it's almost impossible, not impossible, you know it ain't impossible, almost impossible though, to get out of depression. You're medicated or meditated. Either way, that's how it works. And I'm trying to figure out. Here's what happened. Her mother gave her low self-esteem by accident. So we're going to figure out. I'm trying to get back to the source. Her mom used to get dressed in front of her and say, oh, I'm so fat. I'm so ugly. This doesn't fit the right way. I'm so this. And as a 6-year-old girl, her mom was a hero. Then what would happen when people, when they walked outside together, people would tell her, you look just like your mom. And then it happened. She made a meaning from what her mom said to what the people said. And she said, since my mom thinks she's ugly, I must be ugly. And she carried that for 34 years. It's terrible. It pains me to even tell you that story. That's good mom. Mom didn't try to do that. That's not what the mom tried to do. Mama never let the lights get cut off. They grew up in the suburbs. She did a good job. She did the best she could with what she had. But the meaning behind what happened, she interpreted. And she carried that interpretation for many years. Who did that just help? Think about that for a moment. She carried a compliment and it became her detriment. For nearly 36 years, because she made a meaning out of something that was meant to be a compliment. What keeps low self-esteem going? The main thing is what we do with it once we catch it. More is caught than taught. I can teach you plenty, But right now, all of us have a different frame of reference. We have a different vantage point, different super conscious. We all see the world differently. And the problem with that is also the beauty in that. It's what makes this world so great. We are individuals experiencing the one thing. It's beautiful. Put it together, there's great harmony. You cannot play beautiful music if the piano has the same keys. There must be diversity in the tonality of the keys to make a beautiful symphony. All of us are different keys. Together we make beautiful music. Put the same keys together, it's just noise. Anybody heard somebody on the piano just making noise? Like, stop that. Stop. That's noise. They're hitting the same keys over and over with no melodic rhythm whatsoever. When you put in your mind a meaning and you let that meaning no longer serve you, you're on your way to low self-esteem. And that introduces a new point for me. You need to watch what is serving you. If you don't know what you want, you can't tell what's serving you. Some of you are in bad relationships because somebody told you, look good, don't feel good. Who's been in bad relationships before? I wish I had 50 hands I could raise up. I don't even have enough to throw up there. And here's the crazy part. I sought these relationships out. I couldn't wait to date someone that would hurt me. You know why? I had a lot of stuff in my head, but I had one real thing in my head that made me find women that would hurt me. I kept saying, my mama don't love me. How are you gonna love me? And guess what I went out there and found? Women who didn't love me to validate why my mom never came back for me. You see how insane that is? But very common, very practical, and it's almost hard not to blame me for it. We do it every day. None of those relationships serve me. None. And then we'll get minister here doing a great job. What's your name, sir?
Here in Wisconsin.
Here in Wisconsin. Okay. And what's your name?
Bill.
So you get Minister Bill. Pastor? My man. Get Pastor Bill here, okay? He's done marriage counseling all over the place. Helped out a lot of people. He's done some great work. He's been discipling people. He spent 6 years on the phone with somebody. Finally got him off in the church. 6 minutes later, we run him off. You understand that. That's okay. That happens. And then Pastor Bill says, you know what? God, your father, loves you. And then it happens. The meaning in our head messes up his whole conversation. Because how can I respect his God as a father when I don't like mine? Did you see that? Not to make it spiritual, have your own beliefs. But the point is still practical. You can't even give me love, grace, because my view of my father, it taints everything. You can't even speak to me properly because of what's happening in my head. Who can relate to that? Yeah, it's almost every single day. You ever date someone, they told you, you know you shouldn't be with him. Don't do it. And you was like, no, I love you. Only to find out. Only to find out. Boy, they were so right. I sure shouldn't have did that. I'd have wasted all my... I know people right now that... Actually, the woman who... My high school sweetheart dated me at 16. Went into our 20s. Then we broke up. Then she got into another guy like me. Because I didn't change. I was about 25. Men don't become men until we lose everything, as far as I'm concerned. That may not be a fact, But I think that's a pretty strong opinion that can hold a little weight. Until you lose everything, it's really hard to become a man. I don't know about women, but I'm a man. I'm speaking from a man's point of view. I didn't become a man until I was about 20. I didn't even try to do any change until I was about 25. I didn't even try. It was nowhere on my radar. I had no time for it. I wanted some rims and a loud speaker in my car. Come on. You understand. Yeah, you know, I was trying to figure out what size speakers am I going to get in the plexiglass and stuff. It's crazy stuff with crazy money, doing crazy things. And she stopped dating me and dated someone just like me. Probably worse. That's just because my ego talking. He's not worse, but you know, that's just what it is. Then, it's still with him. She's almost 40. Now, I want you to just do a little math with me. 16, I wasted her life to about 24. Then she's still wasting it from 25 to 40. Because she's not in two different relationships. She's in the same relationship twice. If you've missed it, low self-esteem will make you date to the level of your self-esteem. All of you, right now, you have what you think you are. You have dated to the level of your self-esteem. Whatever is wrong with you, that's what you have. Quantum physics says that reality cannot exist until consciousness enters into it. That means you can't even see something that you don't have in you. Let me poll my audience again. It's just, yeah, so used to the, I know all the six major religions, and sometimes sophisticated crowds yourself. I got to hit you right at home with your belief system. Is it churchgoers in here? Churchgoers? Yeah, church, half churchgoers, something like that. Okay, this is a great example then. I got a good most of you. Sometimes God will put you under a King Saul to deal with the King Saul in you. If you're not familiar with it, Old Testament, it's a really bad king that's throwing spears at David and his anointing. He just can't stand his anointing. And David just, he ducks it again. You know, and the text even says that he dodges again. And the whole moral of that is we're not David. We're the spear throwers. But sometimes we'll get placed on the spear throwers to deal with the secret spear thrower in us. And until we learn a lesson, it just repeats itself. Sometimes you're in relationships to deal with what's wrong with you in you. That's why you haven't changed relationships. That's why it's the same one over and over. It's not three. It's not four. It's the same one. Over and over and over, you're in the same relationship, repeating itself because of the level of your self-esteem, because you haven't ascended to the point to where you think you're worth it. Every single problem can come back to one main central idea. You think you're not enough. If you have healthy self-esteem, you think you are enough. If you're neutral, that's bad. If I've been talking and you can't figure out, you know, where you fall in this, that's a major problem. It's a major problem. Because inaction is an action. It is just not an action that serves you. It is the equivalent of driving down the highway. Was that 248 I saw? What highway was this? I just saw. I don't know. I saw so many coming up here. Which one? 25. 94. We take both up. You go to 25 and you take your hands off the steering wheel. You say, you know what? I don't want to get in a wreck. So I'm not going to do anything. I'm just going to get uninvolved. I'm going to just let that happen. Think about that for a second. What's going to happen to you when an intersection comes or a turn in the road? You're at the mercy of the vehicle you're in. And you will crash. You may survive, but you're not leaving without a limp. Think about that for a moment. The people who say, I'm good, I'm neutral, not this or that, that's what you're doing. You're taking your hands off the steering wheel of your life, and you're saying, well, I don't want to cause no problems, so I just won't do anything. And since you won't do anything, everything happens to you. That's just the way it works. You have to take full responsibility for who you are. There was a point in my time, so my self-esteem used my belief, my religious belief system against me, and it didn't let me take responsibility for my life. I put it on what I believed in. You ever met somebody like that? I'm not going to change. He's not through with me yet. I'm not going to change. You know, I'll change later when I get older. I'll stop drinking. I'll stop when something outside of my control finally happens to me. No. Everything is in your control. Even your response to the stuff that was not. Being homeless. Now, let me see my impasse again. And, okay, I'm going to take it somewhere deep, and I'm going to hit it in a minute, so I don't want you to get stuck there, okay? Being homeless, I was raped and molested. Okay, we gone now. We gone, okay? I want you to understand this. That's something, as a six-year-old child, I couldn't control. I didn't say, you know what? You know what I want to do today? I want somebody to violate me. That's what I want to do today. That's not the way I work. But my response to it was in my control. See, I carried that until my mid-20s. I carried that. I carried what happened to me before I turned 10 until my mid to late 20s, and it affected nearly everything in my life. Nearly everything. It's not that that was my fault, but my response to it always was. Always will be. And my level of self-esteem couldn't handle that truth. I couldn't handle that I was responsible for how I was feeling. Forgiveness works like this here. We think that the person needs to know what they did to us to the level that we want them to know it. And then we'll feel better if we feel like it. You ever done that in a relationship? You hurt, so you're going to hurt them as much as they hurt you? Come on, I've been like super transparent. You might as well come with me. Come on. we halfway on the journey anyway. By now, you know, hey, that guy was raped. You come on, you know enough about me to talk about me now. Come on, right? Think about that. I'm going to hurt you until you feel the way I feel. Then I'm going to keep going. We had that voice in our head that said, stop, 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 don't do that. And you're like, no, I'm going to keep doing it because they don't know. They don't know how I feel. And then they're crying, and you finally feel better that you made them cry. You just won't admit it out loud. Leads us to two terms. Power to and power over. The two different forms of power in an abusive relationship. And if you have low self-esteem, you're in an abusive relationship. If anything I've said to you resonates with you in any way, you're in an abusive relationship in your life. Because friends like me won't let you have low self-esteem. If I truly want to serve you, I won't let you. You don't like your body weight? We going to work out. You don't like how much money you want? You don't like your money? You better go get some podcast, some on some finances. What you want to do? We're going to talk to Pastor Bill about some stewardship over some money. We're going to do something here. If no one in your life is helping you change your life to what you don't want, they're abusing you. I know that's rough. Anything you can account for, you can control. The crime rate of inner city Chicago, and it's high I'm either manipulating it, or I'm doing nothing about it to keep it high. But anything you can account for, you can control. If you can account for something, it is now in your control to manipulate and change that thing. This desk is solid because enough matter has jumped on enough energy, coagulated in one place to where it became what we call matter. It's Einstein. Matter is actually what we call matter. We now know that atoms are 90% empty, which is just pure energy. If I burn this desk, we'll prove that, because it won't be a pile of ashes this high. It will be a pile of ashes this high because the energy was released into the atmosphere. I accounted for this podium. I burnt it. I control it. In abusive relationships, if you are not controlling your low self-esteem, someone else is. If you are not controlling it, someone in your life is controlling it by either keeping you in that state or not doing nothing about it because they're comfortable being better than you. Remember I said I designed this to be light? About halfway, it's going to be pretty hard. In about 10 minutes, it's going to be, that guy there, man. It's going to just give me 10 more minutes. It's going to be, it ain't going to get no worse than that after 10 minutes, though. So it's going to stay as deep as it is, okay? The people in your life, they are manipulating you for good or bad. What is evangelism? I am manipulating you to someone who is greater than I. That's it. That's it. I am simply trying to influence you to a higher direction. And if you're not going higher, the people in your life are influencing you to a plateau or to lower. Psychologists say that you're a pretty healthy person until you get into a relationship. It's not that you gain weight in relationships. That back part of your brain that says, well, I don't have to compete against the world no more. As long as I'm thinner than her, I'll be all right. She gained 5 pounds. You say, okay, let me go ahead and gain 3. And it happens real subtly. Over time, we gain because, and once we leave, we say things like, you know, I need a new hairdo. Women do this all the time. New hair, new man. Who knows that phrase? Come on. You okay, you know it, right? We say, you know what? Because now we're competing against the world again instead of our significant other. In abusive relationships, I just told you, if you have low self-esteem, you're all in an abusive relationship. It may not be with your significant other, but someone is allowing you to stay there because it benefits them. It benefits them for you to be right where you are. They feel like the smart friend, the rich friend, or whatever. Whatever it is in your sphere of influence, that's what's happening in your life. In those relationships, whether you're intimate with this person or not, there's 2 different forms of power. Now, there's more, but not in these relationships. Power to, power over. Power to means power to change. Pastor Bill does this all the time. Power over means I am going to establish my power over you one way or the other. Through aggression, through abuse, through manipulation. There's so many different ways we'll get into them. Power to, influence. Power over. How many of you have ever been in a relationship to where you corrected someone and they got violent as fast as possible, even if the violence wasn't physical? That's classic person that is an abusive relationship. They're the primary aggressor, which we'll get to that in a second, and you threaten their power over you. Now, they must kill to get it. They're either going to kill you physically or spiritually, And there is spiritual death, I can assure you. There really is. You've met these members. They talk to the pastor, they won't even speak to you. Okay, must be the one. Y'all ain't never did that like that ever. I know, I get it. Mental, emotional, kill you either way. When you have power over, it means that what you really love in that relationship is the power. What you're really addicted to is the power. This is actual psychology. These are real psychological terms. I'm actually giving to you psychology 101 in relationships. You have someone, you corrected them, but guess what you did? When you corrected them, you didn't make them, you shattered their world. You told them they're not who they think they are, but they already know that. Now you pushed back the veil of pretending for them, and they can't handle it. Now they have two options. Admit they have issues and will change. How many people you know do people do that? You say, you got an issue. You know what? I sure do. I change. How many people? No. Maybe the Dalai Lama, Mother Teresa. Maybe them too. Nobody else that I can think of at all. So what happens, instead of taking responsibility, they got to take you away from showing them the responsibility. Now the relationship becomes classic abuse. Here is some very fun ways to find out if your relationship is abusive. The number one, and it's real sneaky. It's called high involvement. Anybody familiar with that? My intern right there, she is on it. High involvement. That means they've decided to forsake their family and always be with yours. You play basketball, they on the court cheering for you. You like rugby, they're in the field. You like video games, they buy you the PlayStation. Whatever it is that you like going to movies, me too, I'm going now. And the reason they're doing it, and they pass it off. Well, I just want to be with you. I gotta get real, because I'm taking it to the precipice to where I gotta go deeper. So I gotta get real now. I just love you. I just want to spend some time with you. That's all. Come on, baby. Let me just spend time with you. That's it. And you say, you know what? You're all right. I never had that before. Got you. Now you can't do nothing. Can't have no alone time. Who calling us, babe? That's for my younger crowd. What's the password to your Facebook? Come on. You know it. You know it. Now you can't do it because they don't trust you. They don't trust anybody. They don't trust themselves. And the way for them to get over that discomfort is to highly involve themselves in your entire life. That way they know everything you're doing, so they never have to worry. Now, who did that just help? Now, don't look left or right, because you might be here with your significant other. Don't you go home. But honestly, that's one of the great ways to identify if you're in an abusive relationship. If you can have no alone time, that is abusive. And it's abusive. Let's break down these two terms. Primary aggressor and survivor. The primary aggressor is a person always influencing or exercising power over. They're the first person to be aggressive. The survivor is just the one that is at the mercy of the aggression. But don't think you haven't been both. Because we all do it. Who in here was ever what they call in slang cheated on? Okay, cool. Now, who stayed in that relationship though and worked it out? Okay, me and you. You got it. You're a star now, okay? All right. Now, how long did you stay? Year and a half. After that, how often were you mean? Did y'all see her face? Like, well, wait a minute, I couldn't count. Pretty often, right? And you said things like, you're not going to do me like this. Remember what you did to me, right? What happened was you decided, and there's nothing wrong with this. I fully understand. You decided, I'm not going to be the survivor anymore. Now that I have you apologetic, the power, since I never had it, I'm going to take it. And you switch roles. You went from the primary, you went from the survivor to the primary aggressor. Who else has done that? She's so not the only one. I've done it 50 times a year. Now, I haven't dated that many people, but you get the point, though. I've done it 50 times a year. That's way too many people. I would be flat broke because women must be taken out because my grandmother said you treat women properly. That's the truth, though. It's true. Okay. You become the primary aggressor even though you were the survivor. It's not that you're trying to. It just finally feels good to be back in power. Who can relate to that? Yeah, it's fair. People always take advantage of you. They always never pay you back. How many of you right now have so much money loaned out that if you ever get it back, you'll jump tax brackets? you won't even be in the same tax bracket. if you get it back, it's over, you know. Seriously. You're always taken advantage of. Empaths suffer from this more than anybody. In one respect, I feel bad for you. In the other respect, you're changing the world, and we need you. Don't change. We absolutely need you. You know, you don't need a whole, I'm a data guy. I try to prove everything wrong. When I can't, then it becomes fact. That's how I became a believer. I was like, that's wrong. Nope, that's wrong. Oh, well, maybe not. Okay. I try to prove it wrong. And then when I can't prove it wrong anymore, then it becomes a fact. Scientists do that. You don't want a world full of people that's data-driven. You want someone to say, hey, I know her test scores weren't that well, but give her a chance. Something about her. Some of us have jobs right now we don't deserve, but someone on the other side of the table gave us a chance. You have houses you didn't qualify for, but an empath on the other side of the table said, you know what? I know you're going to do well. I believe it. Don't make no sense to me whatsoever, but you see things I can never see. And that's fair, so don't change. But empaths are always picked on, always abused, always trusting, rarely rewarded because we've lost our way. As a collective consciousness, we let 4,500 children die a day, and we throw away 20 tons of food a day. That's us as a collective. We're all guilty. That's not liberal nor conservative. That's data. We're guilty. Well, I didn't do it. We still let it be common. And if you let it be common, you stay silent. And pull it out of that and put it in your relationships. There is some stuff equivalent to what I just said in your relationships that you stay silent for. And now it's common. And you are equally as guilty as the person hurting you. That's how bad low self-esteem gets. It gets into us to where we can't even change it. Yes. Yeah, and I almost said that the first time you talked, self-talk. I wanted to, but I'm so glad it came back up.
It's like there's people around me constantly trying to change my views, but I can't change my views if I don't believe
them. Well, fair enough. Two things there. Everybody watch your self-talk, because remember, your self-talk can only happen how you've trained yourself for it to happen. Napoleon Hill in Think and Grow Rich calls it auto-suggestion. You can only do what you have auto-suggestively told yourself to do. Here's a crude example of auto-suggestion. None of you are going to punch me in the face because you're nice people. Your behavior, not to punch strangers in the face. But if I just run up and just slap you for no reason, you didn't see it coming. You don't have time.
Bill's a boxer.
Okay. You don't have time for that learned behavior now. Your instincts or your auto-suggestion is going to come out. And whatever you are is what's going to come out. Like when you stump your toe on the side of the bed, if you say, oh, Lord, that's what you are. Good job. Good job. If you say the other words, you know, not the ones you learned in Sunday school, you know, you understand. Those words come out and you know what's in you. Old folk in Texas say if it's in the well, it'll come out in the bucket. That means if it's down there, when you pull it up, it's going to come out. No matter how you try to dress it up, no matter how you try to pretend ain't no mud in the water, if it's in the well, it's going to come out in the bucket. That's a Texas wisdom. You know, my old folk, they write though. They write. They write all the time too. I need to start listening more. They write all the time. They write all the time. So watch yourself talk. There's another thing that I interpret for you just listening to you and watching your demeanor. This world is not kind to geniuses. We're not. We're not. Think you may be too smart. I'm serious. It's normally people who are smart. They're not smart on paper. That's the way it works. Because me into the school system, that's different. I actually have a keynote for that. It's called Account for the System, but don't get me into that one. It will take too much time. When you're smart and your beliefs don't coincide with others, then you need to find more clever ways to introduce your beliefs. There's one way. Hey, do you understand? That's one way. It's one way. You ever met those people with the ties and the white shirt? They show up at your house. I won't say them, but you know what I'm talking about? They got the ties. They build the bikes. They're going to 2-year missionaries. Okay, they show up at your house. Okay, I'm not saying there's wrong with that. That's one approach. That's one approach. Or you can do what a lot of empaths do. I know empaths who would change people over time by establishing a relationship with them, take 5 years to introduce to them a concept they've been working on for 5 years. Who does that? Which one of them? I bet you do that. I bet you do. Okay. Take 5 years just to change someone. Because you were slowly introducing that. What time is this again? I forgot. Okay, good. Okay. Now, you want to watch. I had to watch. Let me put it into me. Okay. I had to watch how smart I was because I wasn't doing it properly. I was letting what I knew offend people. I knew I was right. It was so obvious I was right. This was the most obvious. I can see this 50 miles down the road. This is going to happen. You just really going to do that? And I'm like, stop. Don't do it. And when they did it, I told you so. Which is probably the most abusive sentence on planet Earth. It really is. I told you so is so abusive. Oh, it's so abusive. It really is. So I never handled my gift properly. And because of that, I caused more problems than I was trying to fix. It could be one or the other. For me, for sure, that latter, oh, that was so me. I was so abrasive. How many people know smart people that you can't stand? Yeah. It used to be me. You just, I had to totally learn people skills. It's what will change your income. It's what will change your circle of influence. It's what gets you promoted. You know how many smart people are at low-level management jobs because they can't get promoted because no one likes them? I can't fire them because they're really good at their job. So I just keep giving them 2% pay raises every year to keep them satisfied where they're at. I mean, who knows these people? Yeah, these are people just haven't grasped the fact that in order to be successful as a human, you must be kind. That is a universal law. You cannot expect to plant poison and get bananas. That's just not the way it works. And you can't say, ground, give me something, until you put something in it. The wonderful thing about the ground is it will always multiply what you give it. So, principle of multiplication. It's a universal law. It's a scientist that be coming out. It's a universal law. It's one of these great things. People can only treat you how you have told them to. Whether it be overtly or covertly, that's what's happening. It's two things that are happening in an abusive relationship. It's one thing that happens in two different ways. Gaslighting. Anybody familiar with gaslighting? Okay, she's familiar with gaslighting. Yep, yeah. Familiar with gaslighting. All my nice people are familiar with gaslighting. Unless you're the abuser and you're really familiar with gaslighting. Gaslighting happens in... Gaslighting is convincing people this ain't really happened. Or the old folk in Texas say, buying a jury before you need one. That's what the old folk in Texas say. I'm in an abusive relationship with Pastor Bill. I've done Pastor Bill wrongly. I know he's getting ready to tell people. So what do I go do? I go tell all the people we know how wrong he is before he can get to them. Step one in gaslighting. Convince everyone he's crazy. Anybody been through that? You know someone that... Every time something happens, you can't even go to the family cookout because she tell all your business. Or he tell all your business. He talked to his mama about everything. Now, he didn't already forgive you, but you can't even go over there for Christmas now because everybody looking at you crazy about something you accidentally did. These older folk don't do that no more. Well, for us young folk, we still do that. They understand, keep folk out your relationship business if you want it to work. We still learning that. Convince everybody you crazy. Step two, if I can't do that, I got to convince you you're crazy. If I can't convince them that you're crazy, then I must convince you you're crazy. I lie all the time. Who knows someone that just lie about everything? Just won't admit it ever. Ever. This is not going to happen. It's gaslighting. They can't because they need that power over to feel alive. Now, in truth, there are infinite ways to have power. One of the greatest ways to have power is actually not to exercise power. Can't help myself, but those who lose their lives will gain it, right? It's not to have power would then give you power. There's plenty of different ways. But in an abusive relationship, it's only two. You're going to change or you're going to change. Either way, you're going to change. And you're going to do what I want. Now, for the last 20 minutes or so, I need to tell you about how do you leave an abusive relationship? Very hard to do. Who gets that? No matter what I've said, yeah. Got the most hands on that one for sure. No matter what I've said, it's hard to leave an abusive relationship. If it's been violently abusive, now it's hard to leave because you know he said he gonna kill you and you believe it? Because he ain't lied about that. You understand? I mean, this is, or she, vice versa. When this happens, you need to find a support group, mastermind, something, because you can't do it alone. I'm not telling you it's not rough. I wish I had a better answer. I wish I had a textbook answer when I could tell you, go to the wall, press A, pick up, call the police, and they'll come. They won't. Police are busy, especially in the big city. They're busy. fighting real crimes, and they can't always come to your house over domestic disturbance. I get it. However, when you have a circle of friends, that abuser is less likely to be abusive because most abusers are afraid, especially of the police. That's my Southern draw come out. Police, excuse me. I said police, you know, that's from Southeast Texas. It comes out every now and then. I got all this training and sometimes it just blurts out of me. The police, they are afraid of. They're afraid of parental figures. They'll disrespect you soon as you leave your mama house, but not there. So if you have that sphere of influence, that those friends, and you stay around them, it's harder for them to do what they know how to do so well, because they only do it one-on-one. This is why when they bruise you privately, in the body area, never the face. Now, don't be afraid. This one more thing. I'm going to hit this as not to offend anyone of any religion, but it must be said. You cannot only pray about everything. Only, key word, only. You can't have people shooting at you. So I'm going to pray about these bullets coming at me. You got to move. Do you understand? Or not be around where they're shooting. That's logical. Some abusive relationships, and I say this from experience. I had a young lady that, if it's not clear, pastor a little small church down in Southeast Texas, if it wasn't clear. That's why I like this guy right here. Okay. And I moved too slow in what was an abusive relationship. She got hurt really bad. I wasn't experienced. This was many years ago. I wasn't, even though I'm young, I've been doing it a long time. Many years ago. And what she left with was equivalent to pray about it. And it's not right. There is some action that needs to be taken. That's not to be offended. I'm talking about myself. I'm not trying to offend any of you. I'm telling you a mistake I made. Hopefully that doesn't offend you. I'm making myself look bad. Serious. You need to leave with a plan or with some people, not just prayer. Honestly. Last thing, I want to tell you about the cycle of abuse. If by chance you didn't even, now we said nurses, who was the counselor? Did I hear counselor? Counselor, okay. Oh, real. Okay. I'm most certainly talking to you for. I've been on counseling forever. Growing up homeless, going to the school system, they tried to, tried to keep me still with Depakote. Don't even get me started on that big old pill. They totally tried to do that. I mean, I've been on, seriously, the system totally failed. But not the counselors. Not the counselors. The system, but not the counselors. The counselors recognized something was wrong with me. And it wasn't a mental disease. It was a whole lot of mental pain. It wasn't something I need medicine. I didn't know what to do. And the only thing I knew how to do was be angry. And I did that like a genius. One lady told me, every time you get mad, just take it out on the wall. You really did. You really did. It totally helped. It was like some of the most stick and stone advice you could ever get. It was so primitive. It totally helped because as I hit the wall, I didn't hit people. Now, I tell you that's what she told everybody? No. Did she tell my little bad self that? Yes, of course she did. It's probably what I needed. It's probably exactly what I needed. But she recognized something that someone made very popular. Her name is Lenora Edna Walker. It's called The Cycle of Abuse. The cycle of abuse has a few phases. If you catch nothing else, I beg thee, please catch this here. It was first called The Cycle of Violence. She wrote it in a book in 1979 and got her an award. It has revolutionized all the science and psychology I have said to you in this last hour and 15 minutes. It's revolutionized. Books have been written about her book. And new sciences have been started about her science. And she recognized that the first part of the cycle of abuse was the tension building phase. There is nothing more important than what I'm about to say, okay? The tension building phase is when you know something bad is going to happen and you're not supposed to say anything, but you have to walk, talk, act, and look a certain way to keep the tension down. You know it's not going to work, but you're really just trying to delay the inevitable. My dad growing up, by growing up I mean until six, was both a drug addict and a drunk. And by six, I understood, watch how daddy behaves when he walks in the door. If he joked, we joked. Who understands what I'm talking about? If he was mad, we were silent. And if he was, we call it fool in Texas. I don't know if y'all, you know, the South, we got so many words we make up in the South. We just, you know, we don't have any books down there. We just make up words. We talk to each other. We call it fool of that stuff. Fool. Then we knew everybody was getting hit. Everybody. It didn't matter. Everybody was getting hit. But that whole time, we were waiting in the tension building. We understood if he came home laughing, if we stopped his laugh, we would get hit. We understood if he came home drunk and we didn't let him relax, we would get hit. It was constantly tension. It's the first cycle of abuse, cycle, meaning something that starts and stops and starts and stops, and you're never out of it like the rat race in middle-class America trying to make money and trying to survive. You all know it takes about $30 an hour to be broke in America. It really does feel that way. It really does with everything that's going on. Now, the tension-building phase is when you must walk on eggshells. Anybody familiar with that term? To where you know you can't be you. At the same time, you look in the mirror and say, who am I? Where did I come from? I don't even remember me. This is bad. And from the tension building phase is when you get the outburst phase. This is when the tension has climaxed. This means you done messed up. We know it ain't your fault. But to the abuser, it is your fault. They hit you, outburst. They ought to hit you. If they're not physical, then it's verbal, which is way worse than physical. Bones heal. Oh, them words, though. Them words have lasting power. Emotional abuse, spiritual abuse. You have people like me who would manipulate religious texts to keep you where you want to be at. Do all that stuff. Outburst. This is when you've made me mad. Now you have to pay. Anybody been there before? I feel like I'm describing it so perfectly. It's this, this tension, now it's an outburst. However they hurt you, it's happening. And it doesn't just happen shortly. It's not the longest. The longest of these phases is the tension building. The outburst happens quickly, but not quick enough. If you've ever been abused, you understand what I mean by not quick enough. So the outburst happens. You feel a complete loss of control in the outburst phase. You feel psychologically trapped. Who understands that? You, if I do, if I don't, I don't know. I don't know where to go. Girl, won't you leave? I don't have nowhere to go. He took everything. I just felt somebody's energy. You're trapped. You're psychologically trapped. You're financially trapped. He don't let you work no more. Whatever it is, you can't even afford to go, even if you try. Because, I say this gently, you gave your whole life to this person. Now you don't even have your own. They're counting on that. This is part of the cycle. Now that you get past the outburst phase, this is the worst phase. This is an opinion. Opinion, worst being the opinion part. The rest of this is facts. The spent phase. The spent phase, everybody here? Yep, everybody here grown. The spent phase, it's almost now that they've, because when you're addicted to power, it is almost like sex. It's, you get that outburst, now it's cuddle time. That's the spent phase. So when they tell you, you know I love you. I didn't mean to. Come on. You know how I get when I drink? You know I didn't mean it? If you would just, I promise I won't do it again. I'm not going to do it again. Babe, come on. You know it. Who's heard anything similar to that? Suspend phase. The worst phase. The worst to an intellectual like myself, because I know you're only doing this because now you feel good that you hit me. You're only in this phase because you just got satisfied. A few minutes left. I was talking to someone last weekend about something, and they were dead wrong. And I'm sitting there pretty silent. And this person was a religious person, the kind of religious person that goes all wrong, like born and raised in the church. So they have no sins. Everyone else does. Anybody know that kind of person? You know. Everybody else is sinning. You know, not them. Not them at all. You know, that kind of person. And they made me relive something I didn't want to relive. I speak all across the world. And I was at a pain conference. And I happened to mention the rape and molestation part of my story. They saw it online somewhere. And since this is low self-esteem, I'm talking about, did the same thing. I don't mention it all the time. And since they are family, real family, and didn't know about that part, because who gets raped and molested and say, hey, y'all, this is what happened to me. Who does that? No, nobody, right? Of course not. And we wouldn't even have close to family. So now here I am at the table. I'm supposed to prove to myself, to them, how this really happened. So I sat back. I let it happen. And then finally, I said, I tell you what. And I had never done it before. But I said, such and such, it's your burden now. I'm going to tell you who did it. And I named the person, two people. And of course, she knows both of them because I know they did it to her. She don't know I know, but she know that day because I said that. Now, she goes, well, you don't have to defend yourself. Such and such. Your arms is flailing. You don't have to do that. And then she hit me with a scripture. Now, I had been actively listening the whole time until that part. I said, wait a minute. That's the problem with people like you. That only made you feel better, not me. You were uncomfortable. So you wanted to tell me I don't have to defend myself, and then quote some scripture about not defending myself. That made you feel better. That didn't make me feel better. And that is the very epitome of the spit phase. Anything they're saying makes them feel better, never you. They're uncomfortable with what they have done, and now all they're saying is their truth for them, so they feel better about what they did. Anybody know somebody like that? So after you get out the spit phase, there are no more phases. You go back to the tension building phase. Tension, outburst, babe, you know I love you. And right after they do whatever makes them feel good, now here you are dirty, and now it's back to tension building phase time. And the reason I brought this up, and I have no idea why they asked me to come and say this here, but the discomfort I think is quite appropriate, because if you are getting over drugs, on drugs, or someone like you that helps people get off, they're dealing with everything I said. In some cases, their mother is the power over person, and that's exactly why they started drugs in the first place. In other places, they can't deal with the fact they feel unclean for the molestation that happened when they were six. And so they escape. And the only time they feel good is when they're hurting themselves, because their reward system has changed. So I leave you with this. There were two young boys. They had a wonderful mother. And this wonderful mother always let the 9-year-old and the 6-year-old go outside and play. And every day, being trained in the South, they knew to come back when the streetlights came on. When the streetlights came on this one night, the kids didn't come back. And even some good kids. These kids had no problems. These kids listen to their parents, listen to their fathers and the mother. Mom instantly gets worried. She calls the police. The police, being from a small town, instantly come out and they look for the two young kids. And they're trying to figure out where these kids are. And down the block, some sand dunes the kids love to play in, but they can't find them. It's nighttime. So in the morning time, they get over there and they see this 6-year-old boy, chest high in sand, barely breathing. They push away the sand. Finally, his chest gets to contract and open up. He gets some consciousness back. And the police officers say, "Son, where is your older brother?" And the kid with dirt in his mouth, barely breathing, he says, "I'm standing on his shoulders." See, the 9-year-old boy gave his life for his brother. And I think that's what you do. I think you're the kind of people that find people in bad situations. You're the only people willing to get in their dirt, walk in their mud, poison. And every day you do it, you die a little bit yourself. And you get right back up, and you do it again. You are the 9-year-old boy letting the person getting off of drugs stand on your shoulders. And for that reason, you are heroes, and I applaud you. My name is Antonio T. Smith, Jr. You can't plan better. You can dominate.